Quite the commotion, eh?
Beth's been missing for almost 2 days. I can't imagine what she must be feeling right now. Or thinking. She must be out of her head. At the very least, hungry and in need of a shower. Is the hospital far?
It's a bit over an hour's drive into Cork.
I might drive to Cork tomorrow, see if she's coherent. I don't think she needs too much fuss right now. Wesley will ensure she gets the proper care. I suppose not much will get done on the dig now. I should head to my B&B. I've got some research to do.
You fancy that meal at my mother's?
A home-cooked meal sounds great, but there's Eric, too.
He can come along. Mum always makes a feast on Fridays. She expects me to bring over friends. Girlfriends mostly, but I haven't been a good son about that lately.
Daniel cast her a wink, and she marched off. Michael Slater marched across the trampled grass to the edge of the excavation site, where the dried peat cushion made his footsteps feel as though he were walking on a strange planet. The chief archaeologist, Maxwell Alexandre, was packing up his shovels, buckets, and other equipment.
So what was the commotion over there?
The girl is back. The one the captain grabbed the other day.
And how the hell did that happen? How'd she get free?
I don't know, but heads will roll. You packing up?
Aye, it'll be dark soon.
I thought you understood we're on a time crunch. I want to be out of here within the week.
I know that. I've uncovered the entire skeleton. Oh, she's a beauty thanks to the peat. Preserves bones and bits of fabric real nice-like. But not sure I'm going to find any more rocks.
Give it another few days. Don't things tend to move around over the years?
Erosion does tend to do that. Though not much in these conditions. We'll strip the area for sure. Won't leave a single pebble unscrutinized.
You think it could have spread as far as the other camp?
Unlikely. Such a contained cache is probably going to be within the marked area we've peatoned off. I think it would be next to impossible for the rocks to move from the bog to the dirt the other camp is working in. When's the next truck coming?
Not that it's any of your concern, but tomorrow night.
Just want to know to get the crew out on time. Settle your britches, Slater. The operation is going well.
The operation's a joke. The girl, Beth, should have never gotten away. I'm going to go check on the guys down by the river.
Reggie Marks, the captain of the officious little barge that camped down by the river, scratched his belly and slapped his grungy felt cap back onto his bald head.
We moved him.
And in the process, you managed to lose one helpless woman? I can't believe your ineptitude. Who hired you?
Your boss, that Neville bloke. Ain't getting paid to babysit a mollycoddle. You always should keep some woman fancy and entertained. Then you're looking at the wrong crew. Just be thankful I didn't let Smelly Joe get his hands on her. That man breaks his women.
Despite his managing to keep a handle on all the operations Frank Neville had set into place since arriving in Ireland, Slater hadn't been quick enough on the draw when hiring the barge crew. Good men were few and far. Neville trusted Slater to oversee this operation and as a right-hand man for his business deals, yet he still did a lot of work on his own. He was too determined and far too controlling to sit back and let it all happen.
What you standing there for?
Nothing at all.
The captain turned and strode off. To claim the official title of village in Ireland, the settlement had to have a church, a post office, and a pub. No other buildings required. These three things met, you have got yourself a village, Anya thought. Remarkably, the village of Ballybeg boasted the four corners. Each corner featured a pub, though for all proper purposes, the east corner was more a grocery store petrol station that sold diner food and poured Guinness as well. O'Shanley sat on the west corner, and Anya chose it for its smiling pink pig painted on the window. She sat down at the bar next to an older gentleman.
A Guinness, please.
The bartender nodded and went to work. She knew a properly poured pint was all about patience. Eric ambled in while she was waiting. He set his video camera on the warped wooden bar.
Coke, please. No drinking while on the job. A man's gotta stay sharp.
Did you get footage of Beth coming out of the forest?
Yep. And it rocks. Her face was all, hey, what's going on? Who are you people? And she was stumbling, and it looked like she'd been through hell.
But no fairy dust, eh?
Fairy dust? Oh, damn! I wasn't looking for any. It should have sparkled in the sunlight, right?
I'm kidding you, Eric.
No, but seriously, maybe when I run the video through the threshold, the fairy dust will show up like a blacklight seeking, well, you know.
You up for a home-cooked meal in a bit, or did you fill up on Mrs. Riley's sandwiches at the B&B? Daniel Collins invited us over to his mother's this evening.
I'm full. Mrs. Riley made me eat 3 sandwiches and a huge bowl of coleslaw. It was good, but by no means could her cooking compete with a Big Mac.
If that's what you want, you'll have to drive into Cork.
Don't tempt me. I think I'll pass on the invite. I want to check out the local music scene tonight.
Really? How much of a local scene is possible in a village this size? The population is less than 200.
You'd be surprised, Anya. On the way here, I saw musicians with guitars and flutes walking the street. I think they're playing at the Hollow Bog across the way tonight.
It's interesting that you're into Celtic stuff, Eric. Good for you.
Celtic? Sure.
Anya had to smirk. The kid hadn't a clue what the local music was like. The Metallica t-shirt he wore promised he'd be more than a little disappointed upon hearing flutes and fiddles.
You got enough money?
I'm cool, Anya. Hey, do you think a video of the music would be good to insert into our piece? I mean, it would be like a montage of the culture.
That's clever, Eric. I like it. Film away. I'll catch up with you in the morning.
Eric held up a palm, and Anya answered by high-fiving him. Pleased, he gathered his equipment and left. Anya wished the bartender would hurry, but noted her pint was only 3/4 full, and sat there waiting for the final top-off. She turned to the old man next to her, who nursed his own half-full pint. The man's salt-and-pepper beard had been stroked to a point. Age spots battled with bright blue veins across his cheeks.
Beautiful day.
You folks from the dig?
Yes. We're filming for a television program that broadcasts in America. I'm looking into the disappearances from the dig. 3 people. Did you hear about that?
It would be the other crowd.
No offense, but...
Anytime a person starts a sentence with no offense means they are out to offend.
No, I...
The pint of Guinness was set before her. Liquid black gold captured in a glass. Anya dipped a finger into the thick, creamy head and licked it.
If I may ask, when was the last time you saw the other crowd?
Lass, you need to know the other crowd are never seen, only felt.
Or has this happened before? People gone missing? And the suspicion is that, the other crowd is involved?
I recall 2 decades ago, certainly Jones went missing for 3 months.
And?
He was found in a mud hole near the Bandon River, broken leg.
He was in the hole for 3 months?
No, he slipped and fell after the other crowd allowed him to go home. Had to promise them he'd never drive the Hightower Road again, or cut the ash tree at the north end of his property.
Anya knew that certain trees and bushes were revered as fairy trees. Oak, ash, and the hawthorn bush, being the few she recalled from her research. It was thought the she, or fairies, lived beneath them in their tangled roots. Entire freeway systems were built around centuries-old trees for fear of messing with the fairy mojo. Same with fairy wraths, like they'd passed on their drive out to the dig. The grass-covered hills were believed to house fairies beneath. It all related to the earliest inhabitants of the island of Era, the Tuatha De Danann, as Wesley had confirmed her research.
Tell me about the Tuatha De Danann, if you wouldn't mind.
It all happened so long ago, in the BC times that you bone-kickers like to dig about for. A race of giants called the Firbolg were overtaken by the supernatural tribe Danann. The tribe was reputed to be magicians and wield remarkable powers no man could explain. They battled against the Firbolg up by Kong, northwest of here. I've been there a time or two. The air brewed still. It was the Celts who defeated the Tuatha De Danann. It is said the battle was so bloody the sea turned red for an entire year. But when the Tuatha De Danann knew their end was near, they turned themselves into wee folk and fled underground to live among the she. You ever see a fairy wrath?
The hills across the countryside? Yes, they are mystical.
You best watch how you go about those wraths and sacred ruins, my girl. The fair folk don't give favor to those who tread their grounds with malicious intent.
Would they go so far as to kidnap a person who was making them angry?
Oh, yes.
What about someone who wandered onto their grounds without ill intent?
You keep asking stupid questions, you'll go missing too.
The old man turned back to his pint. Then she caught his grin before he quickly hid it by taking another swallow.
Thanks for that encouraging vote of confidence. Stop asking questions and keep an eye out for things you can't see. I'll see what I can do about that.
Make sure that you do.
Anya relaxed as the thick froth trickled down her throat and was washed deeper with the cool beer.
Heard Beth Gwillem wandered in from wherever she'd gone missing.
Yes. Little over an hour ago, actually. Did you know her?
I've heard of her.
Wesley Pierce drove her to Cork to have her checked out by a doctor.
Ah, Pierce is the bloke who winks at all the girls and flashes his unnaturally white teeth at them. He and Beth had a thing, you know.
How do you know?
Whole town knows. We know everything that's up with everybody. They had a spat, they did. You might want to question Loverboy if you're intent on finding the real answers.
I'll do that.
You talk to Mrs. Collins up the way. You want to know about the other crowd. She'll have what you need.
Thanks. I'm having dinner with her this evening.
Well, then you'll see her collection. That lady does have a pack rat in her. Blessed Rachel.
Garin raced to the curb where his limousine waited and slid inside. The driver already had directions to the auction house. They'd grilled him on his overseas travels. It was as if they'd suspected him of third-world espionage. Although he could claim a certain amount of notorious dealings, he covered his tracks well. And he'd kept his cool while sitting in the customs office. He knew when to bow to authority and when it was best to make a fuss and start threatening subordinates. To his credit, the man who'd contacted the German consulate to verify his passport had been polite and efficient. He'd wanted to get Garin through customs as quickly as he could, and Garin appreciated that.
I had to get a passport waiver. This is obviously not my day. What time have you got?
3:10, Mr. Braden. I'll try my best, but the auction started at 3.
Damn it.
Rue had called while he'd been crossing the Atlantic Ocean to let him know his bidding paddle would be waiting. He wasn't sure of the order of items to be auctioned off. He might still make it, unless the Fouquet went first.
I could call in my bid. I'll have to. Rue wanted me to take a look at it first, but it's got to be the painting.
Garin slapped his suit coat, mining for his cell phone.
Oh, hell. You have a phone up there, Stefan?
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Braden. My daughter dropped it in the toilet this morning. Did you forget yours?
Oh, it's back at the airport. You have any painkillers up there, Stefan?
Remarkably, he arrived at the doors to Christie's at 4:20. Garin rushed through the entrance, his presence and sheer size keeping most from questioning his determined path toward the auction room. He stopped at the reception desk and showed ID to get his bid paddle. At least he still had his wallet.
Has the Fouquet been offered yet?
The woman in thin black-rimmed spectacles drew up the auction list on her computer and scanned it.
You mean the painting in the style of Jean Fouquet? Yes, Mr. Braden, that was just purchased. Is it what you've come for? Oh, I'm very sorry. We are offering a Parker, which is similar in style.
Not interested. Can you tell me who did win the Fouquet?
Oh, that information is private, Mr. Braden.
Beyond the glasses, the woman's eyes gleamed brightly. Her skin was pale and flawless. Her features were delicate, even disguised beneath the stiff and proper gray suit. A butterfly struggling to explode from her cocoon.
Would you deny the winning bidder an opportunity to double their money from someone who is interested in obtaining the work?
Well...
She looked over her shoulder, checking all corners and the closed office door. Garin followed her finger as she trailed it across a line detailing the buyer's name and address. He read upside down and committed the information to memory.
Thank you, miss...
Oh, Haversham.
A lovely name, but not so lovely as you.
Oh. It's a pity you missed the bidding.
It is. But I'm not a man accustomed to being denied anything he wants.
I guessed that about you.
Good afternoon, Miss Haversham. It was a pleasure.
Garin winked and turned to stroll out. controlling his need to punch the wall as he did so. So close. And the damned painting had gone for 500,000. Was he willing to lay down a cool million for something he'd hoped would be burned and never again see the light of day?
Not if I can take it for free.
Somewhere in the thatched cottage, half a mile north of the dig site, a clock chimed 10 p.m. Anya noted that it was difficult to track each chime, for the ambient noise of smaller clocks ticking, infinity balls clicking one steel ball against the other, alarms chirping, and one small wooden stick man climbing up a ladder. Mrs. Collins's home, which much resembled a hobbit's cottage on the outside, was a virtual museum of oddities and gewgaws. Pack rat indeed. Rachel Collins clasped her hands before her face. Crepe-thin skin did not conceal the faint blue veins beneath, nor did the twinkle in her eye master her bright green irises. Daniel stayed behind in the kitchen, drying the supper dishes. Mrs. Collins had served up a feast of raspberry lamb chops, basil-seasoned small potatoes, and two different kinds of homemade bread rolls. The shortbread cookies for dessert must have been bathed in butter. They slid down Anya's throat like a dream.
Daniel tells me you already own the Spear of Lu.
I've had the spear for decades. Come see.
Led down the hallway that was narrower for the shelving from floor to ceiling, Anya noted the more interesting trinkets. A blue plastic, posable Aquaman figure minus one hand. A copy of a Fabergé egg, only thumb size and very likely decorated with rhinestones. A few fist-sized clods of dirt. Maybe they were imagined meteorites. She spotted what looked like an alicorn, twisted bone and all, if unicorns existed. A perfect yellow rose was amazingly preserved in a bowl of clear marbles. It wasn't silk, either. Anya touched it gently to be sure. They entered a small living room, and Anya felt her vision go crossed from the utter cacophony of stuff. Everywhere, things hung on the walls, inhabited the corners, dangled from the ceiling. There was a television, which she wouldn't have immediately picked out were the sound not on, and had the flash of a toothpaste model's teeth not caught her eye. Yet another chord to the cacophony of whimsy.
An amazing collection. Where did you get all this stuff, Mrs. Collins?
Oh, I've been a collector since I was a wee lass. Always picking up bits and bobs wherever I go. I never spend much on any single piece. Most people give me things, or I find them. The digs are great places to walk after hours. All kinds of interesting baubles to be found there. Here it is.
Rachel turned and displayed a small spear upon both hands. It was 2 feet long, made of wood, and decorated with faded red paint that had obviously been stripped by sun and age. The head looked bronze for the green patina that tipped the base where it was fitted into the shaft.
The Spear of Lu.
She presented her find so grandly, Anya found herself nodding in acceptance as the woman handed it to her. It was aged, but not centuries old. Certainly not an artifact. She wondered if Mrs. Collins would be offended if she saw Anya search for the Made in China marking. Anya tilted it in one hand.
Interesting.
Oh, no, dear. You mustn't attempt to hold it as if you intended to throw it toward your prey.
I understand the legend says that the Spear of Lu, when thrown, always makes a kill. Then it returns to the owner's hand.
Exactly. And if it misses the target, it returns and kills the owner. Not a pretty outcome for you, dear.
Nope.
Anya studied the tip, sliding a fingernail under the patina. It was bronze, so that ruled out China.
Those fairies certainly are a vicious bunch.
Mustn't speak of them so, dear. They don't appreciate being named so bluntly. I prefer the wee folk.
Wee folk, eh? And yet, weren't the Tuatha De Danann, who gave this spear to Lu, great and mighty warriors?
That they were.
And they were man-sized, not small.
Yes, indeed, the folk come in all sizes, dear. I tend to the wee ones, I do.
And how do you tend to them? Milk offerings on the back stoop?
Can't be doing that. The cats will get into it. I'll take that, then.
Anya relinquished the spear. Rachel held it reverently as she placed it on a shelf above the television. Anya noticed the stone above the spear's shelf.
That's a pretty piece of quartz. So clear and defined. You find that near your home?
Rachel handed her the cool piece of stone. About the size of an acorn, one side was roughed and curved, while the other had defined crystal facets.
Right where the newer dig camp has set up at the bog's edge, actually. But it's not quartz, dear. It's a rough diamond.
Anya lifted a brow at that, but didn't challenge Rachel's statement. Fairy spears and Fabergé eggs, so why not real diamonds? She had never heard of diamonds being found in Ireland. The country was overflowing with gold and uranium, but not the sparkly bling.
That bit of rock seems to fascinate many. That Mr. Neville Danny brought over a while back wanted to buy it from me.
How much did he offer you?
£1,000. Can you believe it?
And you didn't sell?
Dear, a diamond that size is worth hundreds of thousands of pounds sterling.
And yet you keep it on a shelf.
Oh, I don't need the money, dear. It's just a pretty trinket I enjoy owning.
Anya sought a light source, but the only thing in the room was the TV. She didn't know rocks. It could be common quartz. It could be something more valuable. Only someone in the know could determine. Like Frank Neville. Had to be if the man had offered her that much for it, and yet so little if it were real.
You know it's illegal to keep items found from a dig site.
It wasn't a dig site when I found it, dear.
Rachel held out her hand. Two bends of her fingers demanded she return her prize. Anya handed the stone to the woman, who polished it against her sleeve before replacing it on the shelf.
Danny says I've not to worry about the things I find on my property.
Anya did the map work in her head and figured she couldn't have possibly found it on her property. The dig was set on property owned by a farmer who had let his crops go years ago, but she wasn't prepared to push the argument.
So you've met Mr. Neville?
I didn't much care for the man. He didn't even try my blood pudding.
You ladies plotting to take over the world with me mum's arsenal.
Your girl is very smart. I like her.
It's getting late. I left Eric to himself in a village with four pubs. I'd hate to have to explain that one to his family. It was a lovely meal, Mrs. Collins.
You'll come back soon, dear.
Daniel led Anya outside. The night was still, and the stars were out in full force in the black sky.
She's a marvel.
Don't worry. She's not picking brides.
Are you sure?
Well...
Thanks for the meal, Daniel. You're not at all concerned about some of the stuff your mother picks up in fields and dig sites?
You mean things that would have archaeological value? No, it's all junk, Anya. You saw the plastic alligator with the pink glass eyes.
I did. I also got a good look at her so-called diamond. She said Frank Neville offered to buy it from her. Why would someone offer so much money to buy a chunk of quartz?
I wasn't aware of the offer. How much is so much?
£1,000.
Ah, well then. I imagine my mum didn't sell. Neville was probably humouring her. Mum gets so few visitors nowadays. And a handsome man comes to visit, well...
Daniel strode down the cobbled pathway to the white-painted gate before his mother's home.
Care to walk a bit? I could show you my stones.
Your... stones?
Big ones. Just beyond the ridge. Come along! An archaeologist won't want to miss this.
After a brisk amble across the field and over a hill capped by hawthorn and heather, Anya and Daniel descended a slope to a grassy field.
Not exactly Stonehenge, but it is a treasure all the same.
Anya stopped beside Daniel. Halfway between them and the river's edge stood a circle of stones. A remarkable circle that sported four standing stones twice as high as her.
It's amazing. What's the name of it? Is this catalogued as a monument?
It is. And it's called Greystone Circle. Their history is that the devil tried to throw them in the abandoned river, but his reach wasn't so good.
The devil threw a lot of stones about the country.
Indeed. Every other legend of standing stones involves the old lad. But it's on Collins' land, so we've the right to allow or disallow people from visiting it. I get a lot of hikers passing by. But I'd like to keep the visitors to a minimum. Destroy the land and have the vehicles driving through. You want to walk closer?
Anya didn't answer. She took off down the slope, her pace increasing to a jog. Three pillars of roughly rectangular shape stood spaced about 10 feet apart, The third pillar tilted at a 45-degree angle. One stone lay on its side, and it rose as high as her waist. Daniel joined her and sat upon the fallen stone. Anya prowled the upright stones, spreading a palm across the cold, pocked surfaces as she marveled.
Ever do any excavations?
There was one in the 1920s, and then later in the 60s. My grandpa allowed an archaeological team to have a go at it. Found some bones and ceremonial ceramic pots and a bunch of useless shards. They're all in my mum's collection now.
Even the bones?
Aye. When I was a lad, me and me friend used to come here and romp about. We'd play theatre, and this stone was the stage. Or we'd trick the lasses into laying down on this one, and we'd play the doctor.
Really?
But we'd play sacrificial victim too. Certainly Jones used to be the priest with the knife. He'd cut out our gizzards and offer them up to the gods under the full moon.
Wow. You must have had a lot of gizzards to spare.
That we did. They're magical gizzards, capable of regeneration under the full moon. Sacrifices were only done under the full moon, you understand?
Of course.
Daniel pointed to the tallest stone, notched along the top.
See there? On the winter solstice, you can view the sunset through that notch. Only day of the year that happens.
According to popular belief, druids had been lured to use these stone circles, crafted well before their time, as a means to tell time and season by carefully using notches and holes in the actual stone and aligning them with the sun and various planets. Daniel jumped down and stood before her, his face even with hers.
So what do you think? Do the stones bring out your inner pagan? Do you believe the Tuatha De Nanann may have once used this very circle for something?
Possible.
Ah, you're lying through your teeth on your creed. You're a skeptic.
Someone has to be. I won't dismiss their use for astrological time-telling and calendars. And sure, sacrificial offerings can't be disregarded. But as meeting places for fairies...
Daniel stroked Anya's cheek, brushing aside her hair with a forefinger. The touch was warm and it startled her, but not enough to want to move away. So maybe she could be put in the mood.
You New York City types have lost all imagination.
So I'm a type? I have a very healthy imagination. Sitting under the moonlight on this amazing monument to history stirs up all sorts of images of druids, Vikings, and Celtic warriors. I'd love to have witnessed the creation of a site like this. Can you imagine the ingenuity? The planning? We think our technology is so remarkable, and yet we can still only make conjectures as to how these stones were moved and what their uses were thousands of years ago.
So you aren't all about the bones and the textbooks?
Give me some credit. I am here looking for fairies.
Indeed.
Daniel leaned in and kissed her. He stroked a hand along her back and moved her closer. Moonlight kisses beat standing stone circles any night, and Daniel Collins knew how to kiss. Daniel nudged his nose along her ear.
You're a fine New York City woman, Anya.
He pressed his forehead to hers.
I tried to convince you to take off your clothes for the doctor, but I guess you'd be on to me with that one.
Hey, you got it. I think sacrificial victim would kind of spoil the mood, too. What say you get me started on my walk back to Ballybeg?
You in the mood for some wine?
Are you trying to seduce me, Daniel?
I was until I mentioned the wine. You probably don't want to get me started talking about that.
Eric mentioned the same thing. You like your wine?
It's a hobby.
It is late. I was serious about keeping an eye on Eric.
It is fortunate. He stopped at O'Shanley's where Mary Margaret filled him up with sausages and a bland ale. If he's lucky, he wandered into O'Leary's and well... Perhaps you should hurry. If the Guinness doesn't put him under the table, Lisa McGinley's flirtations will. See you on tomorrow, Anya.
Anya waved him off and picked up her pace. He'd had the Manhattan penthouse only a short time, but Garin Braden used it often. He traveled extensively. It was more wanderlust than anything, though he did have varied business interests that saw him flying from country to country. Staying in one spot for more than a week was not something he managed well, and he'd only negotiated a 48-hour stay in the country with the waiver, so this trip was par for the course. The first thing he'd done upon entering the penthouse was rummage for a spare cell phone in his office. There was enough charge to make a quick call.
I thought to hear from you sooner. How did it go?
It's today.